We gather here this morning to examine the issue of paramount importance, the condition of our nation's infrastructure, and proposals for needed improvements to it. I believe this is an urgent priority for our nation for two fundamental reasons. First, because the safety and health of all Americans is directly and adversely affected by the deterioration of our roads, bridges, mass transit, drinking water, wastewater removal, and other vital components of our national structure. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration reports that approximately 14,000 Americans die each year, at least in part because our roads and bridges are crumbling before our very eyes. Congestion on our roads causes tons of carbon dioxide and other pollutants to be pumped into the atmosphere day after day. These emissions compromise the health of children and adults and contribute to global warming, which poses immense risks to the future of all humans. Tens of millions of Americans receive drinking water in their homes every day from pipes over 100 years old. I just point out as an aside here, the leading stories in this city over the last several days have been the quality of the drinking water in this city. There have been serious issues raised about it. People now talk about buying bottled water here in the nation's capital because of the contaminants, allegedly, which are in our drinking water here. As I said here, some of the pipes in our cities literally were built in the 19th century. Here in our nation's capital, in Georgetown, one of the most exclusive areas in this city in terms of residential cost, wastewater is still conveyed through wooden sewage pipes. Were built in the 19th century. That's the sewage system here in the nation's capital in Georgetown. In the city of Milwaukee, over 400,000 people were sickened several years ago with flu-like symptoms caused by a strain of bacteria in the municipal drinking water system. The bacteria strain was eventually linked to inadequate treatment of the drinking water in that city. If Americans needed any more proof of the health and safety risks they face from our crumbling infrastructure, they got it on August 1 of last year, when a major transportation artery in Minneapolis abruptly collapsed without warning, causing the deaths of 13 people and injuring 100 more. The second reason why renewing our nation's infrastructure is of utmost importance is that our national prosperity is at stake if we don't act. From the days of the Roman aqueducts to the present, a nation's ability to grow and prosper has always relied upon its ability to effectively move people, goods, and information. Ask any American today how we're doing in achieving this objective, and chances are the response would be the same. We can do better. When the average American spends 51.5 hours a year in traffic congestion, we can do better. When you have 33% of all urban and rural roads in poor, mediocre, or fair condition, obviously I think we can all do much better than that. And when the United States invests less than 2% of its gross domestic product on infrastructure, while countries like China and India invest between 7 and 12%, we can do far better than that. There's no question in my mind then that our nation's infrastructure needs are enormous and immediate. The question for us as policymakers is this: how do we meet these needs? Clearly, the status quo is not in and of itself sufficient. The American Society of Engineers estimates that an investment of $1.6 trillion over 5 years is required just to bring our current infrastructure to an acceptable level. That's just maintenance and repair. That's not doing anything new. That's just maintaining and repairing the existing infrastructure, $1.6 trillion. That translates into $320 billion a year just to upgrade existing structures to serve the needs of our nation. At this moment in history, when we are contending with the prospect of significant long-term budget deficits, we must explore other creative and fiscally responsible ideas by which to fund our nation's infrastructure needs. Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska and I have offered one such idea, a national infrastructure bank, which would establish a unique and powerful public-private partnership. Using limited federal resources, it would leverage the significant resources and innovation of the private sector. It would tap the private sector's financial and intellectual power to meet our nation's largest and most critical structural needs. I note that, as today's witnesses demonstrate, support for this initiative spans the ideological spectrum, which in my view speaks to its promise. Some might say that our legislation is too expensive or that we can't afford to implement such a policy. I would say, as many of our witnesses will this morning, we can't afford not to implement it, given these costs today at $1.6 trillion. As I'll ask our witnesses at some point, what projected costs would be 5 and 10 years from now if we fail to act at all. The budget resolution on the Senate floor this week establishes a reserve fund for the specific purpose of meeting our infrastructure needs. And I want to commend Ken Conrad and Judd Gregg, the chair and ranking member of the Budget Committee, for establishing that fund. It is evidence of a growing consensus in the United States Congress and the country that complacency can no longer substitute for action in this area. So let us be clear, the cost of meeting this challenge will be great. It's not insignificant at all. But the cost of failing to meet it, in my our view, is even greater, far greater. From the Erie Canal to the interstate highway system, every generation of Americans has answered the call to build a safe, stronger, and more prosperous America. Our time to do the same has come for this generation, and that time is short, and for the sake of our nation's future, we cannot fail, in my view. I appreciate the willingness of our witnesses this morning to share their insights with the committee today, and we look forward to your testimony.